we were privileged last year to hear from Rabbi Levin, and it's always a privilege to hear from Rabbi Levin. We go back a bit, and I think for a while I was on the receiving end of some probably well-deserved, not from Rabbi Levin, I think my sister banned I won't go in this direction. Rabbi Levin is I remember him from the DRS, the program in DRS days, and then moving on to Ish Kodesh, and all the while apparently plowing through Shas, you know, again and again and again. And if I, you know, say a word, just speaking a little bit about the Sfeira of Soloveitchik, not to make a direct comparison, but the idea that when you're speaking about someone, to try to speak about them in an accurate way that really actually says something meaningful about them, as opposed to something generic and maybe even fluffy. So fusion of Gemara and Halacha and Machshava that Rabbi Levin brings to the table is very unique and very much probably, I guess we say, very much needed nowadays. And therefore, it was obvious, I think, was first thought to try to bring speakers that would broaden and enlighten us to ask Rabbi Levin to speak. And he's once again been like really, really gracious in agreeing to speak. I'm sure it's not easy. Busy, you know, demands on time. There used to be stories about ridiculously early waking up hours. I don't know if that was then. Now things have normalized, but either way, it's always a privilege and a pleasure, and we very much appreciate the effort and the time Rabbi Levin takes to speak to us. Thank you very much.
So I'll fill in some of the gaps, I guess, what Rav Nussbacher was referring to, and thank you for that lovely introduction. But what he was referring to was when I was in 12th grade in Frisch. Yes, I went to Frisch. So Rav Nussbacher interviewed me, and I did not get into Shalvim, which is a great segue for this discussion, because sometimes things happen in life, and although they seem I'm fine going there. sometimes you have certain expectations in life and certain directions you want to go in, and they don't always turn out the way you planned, but HaKadosh Baruch has his own plan, and for me that was the best decision probably for me. And we could discuss that privately, why that was. So I thank Rav Nussbacher for that opportunity and that springboard. That being said...
Can I make a joke about where we are now? Sure. Now,
huh? There's the story of the Imri Emes that he once came late to shul, and his father, the Sfas Emes, was yelling at him afterwards and reprimanding him for coming late to shul. And the truth is, he didn't come late to shul. He was there the whole time. His father just didn't see him, but he just listened to his father yell at him. So afterwards, his friends asked the Imri Emes, "So why didn't you just tell your father that you were here the whole time, to miss out an opportunity of tochacha from the Sfas Emes?" Sometimes it's good to hear that rebuke. Sometimes it's good to hear how we can make ourselves better. And that's what I want to discuss tonight a little bit. When I asked Meir what you guys are learning, he said, Masechta Sukkah. I was trying to figure out what about Sukkah I could speak about, and I connected to the Parsha maybe. And the Parsha talks about Galus, Ari Miklat. And we're in the Bein HaMetzarim now, which is Galus, a period of distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Galus and Churban Beis HaMikdash. And Sukkah is also about Galus. But even when we're in times of Galus and separation, the Bnei Sascha writes that we have a famous statement in English, distance makes the heart grow fonder. So although sometimes we have to take rebuke, we have to take Galus and darkness and punishment, that leads often to great Geula, great Yeshua. And Sukkah, Masechta Sukkah, the concept of Sukkah is very much that point about being in Galus, kicked out of the house, but it's a type of Galus that's full of Kedusha, full of Mitzvah. So let's discuss this concept of Sukkah. I want to discuss a little bit, Meir said a little bit of Halacha, a little bit of Machshava, so I'm going to try to blend the two together if we can. So let's talk a moment about Galus in general, Ari Miklat. The Pesukim tell us about Ari Miklat in the Torah, this week's Parsha. And if I were to tell you the following halacha, I doubt you'd believe me, but I see there's at least one Kohen here. Any other Kohanim here? Any Levim here? So what if I were to tell you that you Levim and Kohanim are only chayv to bench on a Dirabanan level? What would you think about that? Would anyone believe me here? There is a shita, perhaps shita's Rashi, that says Kohanim and Levim only have to bench on a Dirabanan level. Why is that? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos Daf Chaf Amud Beis that there's a machlokes or there's a suffix whether or not women are chayv to bench or not. So what's the tzad to say that women are pater from benching? So Rashi says the reason why they're pater from benching possibly is because since it says arta sher nasa arta tova shenasan lacha, and women don't have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael aside from Benos Slavchad, which Rashi addresses last week's parsha. It's a different reason. But in general, women don't have a chelik ba'aretz, so they can't bench. You have to have a chelik ba'aretz in order to bench. Tosos says, according to that logic, Kohanim Levim also don't get a chelik ba'aretz. They don't get an achuza. They weren't given any property in Eretz Yisrael. So you're going to say that Kohanim Levim also don't have a chiv to bench? So what does Tosos say? Anyone know Tosos and Brachos, what he explains, why women are pater from benching, at least possibly? Brischa. Women don't have a bris mila, and that's why they're pater. But Rashi says the reason why a woman doesn't bench, midiraisa perhaps, is because they don't have a chelik ba'aretz. So neither to Kohanim Levim. And in fact, the Shilti Giburim says, according to Shita's Rashi, that you need to own land in order to bench, women, rather Kohanim Levim, are only chayiv on a Dirabanan level to bench. So says the Magen Avraham. He says, no, Kohanim Levim, of course. Of course they have to bench midiraisa. Why? Why do they have to bench? Where's the chelik ba'aretz? Anyone know? Where do they live? Where do the Levim live? Right, the 48 cities, Ari Miklat. They lived in the Ari Miklat. So they did have a chelik ba'aretz. So did they or did they not have a chelik ba'aretz? So before we even get there, the Torah tells us that there's an Isser deraisa, lo yehela kohanim ha-levim kol sheva levi chelik v'nachala im Yisrael. That Kohanim Levim don't get a chelik ba'aretz. They're not allowed to have any land. But in this week's parsha, the Torah tells us otherwise. The Torah tells us, Hashem told Moshe Barbas Moav, Tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'nasnu la'levim minachlas achuzasam arim la'shaves, to a place to live. U'migash la'arim. So did they have a chelik? Did they not have a chelik? The Torah tells us in Parsha Ekev there's an Isser for them to have a chelik baret. And this week's Parsha in Maaseh tells us they did have a chelik. They had the cities to live in. So the Or Chaim HaKadosh writes on the Parsha this week, he says, no, they don't have a chelik, but betors chesed, yinu lehem. They need a place to live. They can't be homeless. So they didn't own the property, but they were given permission to live in the cities. So let me ask you a question. Who here has learned Maseches Makos? It's a popular Gemara. It's a short Gemara. Anyone making a seam this coming 9 days of Maseches Makos? It's a very popular one also. No one? You still have time. No? Does anyone remember the mission of Maseches Makos that tells us there's a machlokas on Daf Yud Gimel, Amun Aleph, whether the Levium could collect rent from the people living there? The murderers who live there, where people who just decide to move to Ari Mikla, can they collect rent or not? So the Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they can collect rent, and according to Rabbi Meir, they may not collect rent. So what's that machlokas? So listen to this Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says they're arguing about what was the nature of the Ari Mikla as it related to the Levium. And this is the language. The Yushalmi says in Maseches Ma'aseh Sheni, L'machlokes nitnu, which means L'chaluka nitnu, it was given as their portion, or L'beis dira nitnu, just a place to live, but not their chelek, not that they would own. So what does he say? If you assume that it was their chelek mamish, they own the property, so then they'd be allowed to collect a rent. But if you assume there's only given to them as a base dira, just a place for them to live, so then they cannot collect rent. They're just living there with permission, but they don't own it. So this is a very important machlokas that appears in the Yerushalmi, which explains this machlokas in the Mishnah and Makos. They're more nafkaminas. So this explains also, are Kohanim Levim chayv in benching, or are they not chayv in benching? Well, it depends. Do they own the chelik ba'aretz, or do they not? So if you assume that it was given to them b'toras chaluka, whereby they own it, so then they should bench midiraisa. That's what the Magen Avraham writes. But if it's only b'toras dira, just a place for them to live, but not for them to own the property, so then they'd only be chayv to bench on a dirabana level. That's the shita of the Shilte Hagibun. There's another machlokas that appears. You guys know what vidui meiser is? Yeah? We learned Parshas Kisavu, we read about vidui meiser. Vidui meiser is when the farmer would go ahead and bring the fruits, meiser sheni, he'd make a whole confession. It wasn't really a confession, but a whole statement, he would say. So you have to own land in Eretz Yisrael in order to say this vidui meiser when you bring your fruit. So there's a machlokas in the Mishnah. Can a Kohen and Levi say vidui meiser, or can they not say vidui meiser? Do they own land in Eretz Yisrael, or do they not? It's the same Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as the Mishnah in Makos, and they go to Shitaso. If they own land, so then they can say vidui meiser. But if the Ari Miklat's only b'toras dira, only a place for them to live, then they cannot say vidui meiser. And the same exact machlokas appears with mikra bikurim. What's bikurim? When it comes to shivas haminim, the first shivas haminim of that season, they would bring them to the base of Migdash to be eaten. So by the Kohanim. So can a Levi, does he have to say mikra bikurim, or does he not say mikra bikurim? This too, the Yerushalmi says, depends on whether it's b'toras chaluka or b'toras dira. Whether it's given to Levim as land to own, which case they would say mikra bikurim, or is given them just to live, but not to own. And they wouldn't say mikra bikurim. And this is an important machlokas that appears in many other places. I'll do one last nafkamina to explain this machlokas, whether it's b'toras chaluka or b'toras dira. You all know what Irna Dachas is? In Sanhedrin, Irna Dachas, when a whole city was convinced to do Avodah Zarah, so you wipe out the city. So there's halacha and a few Rambams that talk about certain cities that are exempt from being considered Irna Dachas for technical reasons. One such example, anyone know an example of a city that is not subject to Irna Dachas? What?
A border city?
Any other cities? A name of a city? Anyone can think of a name of a city, a particular one?
Yerushalayim,
excellent. Yerushalayim there's an exception that there is no Irna Dachas to Yerushalayim. Anyone know why? Because it wasn't given b'toras chaluka. Lo nischalka l'shvatim. So there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid whether Ari Miklat can be a Irna Dachas or not. The Rambam says an Ir Miklat cannot be an Irna Dachas. He writes this in Hilchas Avodah Zarah Perek Dalad Halacha Dalad that Ari Miklat cannot be Ari Miklat cannot be Irna Dachas because lo nischalka l'shvatim, because no one owns it. Ah, they're Levim living there? They live there, but Beis Dira, but not b'toras chaluka. And the Ravid says, no, of course it was given to the Shvatim, it was a nischalka l'shvatim, and it can be subject to an Irna Dachas, because the Ravid assumes that it was b'toras chaluka, as a chelak, a nachla, as if they own them. So this is a very important discussion when it comes to Ari Miklat. I want to now transition into a little bit of machshava, maybe a little deep machshava in understanding Golus and Ari Miklat in general. There's ancient chida. We're going to go pretty deep here. I hope that's okay. There's a chida that writes in Parshas Vayelech, it says, Vayelech Moshe Vaidaber. Moshe went and he spoke. Where'd he go? The Pasuk doesn't tell us where he went. The Chida writes that Moshe was busy wandering for 120 years. 120, says the Chida, is the same exact match as Nun Ayin, Na. What's Na? Anyone know where that word comes up? Where else in the Torah comes up? Nun Ayin, Na? Na v'nad. Kain and Hevel, the story of Kain and Hevel. Kain was jealous, he killed Hevel. And Kain was punished with Na v'nad, to wander and to be alone in Galus. So Chida says this very cryptic statement that Moshe was Vayelech, he was wandering for Nun Ayin years, 120 years, and he leaves it at that. What does that mean, he was wandering for Nun Ayin years? So hope I could speak about Gilgulim a little bit, that it's known from that Rizal that Moshe Benu was a Gilgul of Hevel. The Rizal writes that after Hevel died, Moshe Benu came back, the Gilgul of Hevel came back in the form of Moshe Benu, and Moshe was here to fix something that went wrong between Cain and Hevel. So somehow Moshe Rabbeinu is being masakein the nav and nod of Cain and Hevel, the wandering and the loneliness of Cain that he experienced. If we could dig a little deeper, who knows who was the first murderer in all of history? Cain? Incorrect. Any other suggestions? Close.
Adam.
Who did Adam murder? Before Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, there was no such thing as death in this world. There was no Misa in this world. When Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, he brought Misa, he brought murder. He murdered, if you will, all of humanity. And he was in Gan Eden, and he was sent into Gullus, Ari Miklat, right? He murdered mankind. Now it's fascinating that the letters Eden, Gan Eden, Ayin, Dal, Nun, are the same exact letters as Nav and Nod, Nun, Ayin, Nun, Dal, just backwards. Eden is Ayin, Dal, Nun, Nod is Nun, Ayin, Nun, Dal, everything's backwards. So, Adam was exiled from Gan Eden into a place that was Nav and Nod. He was wandering like Cain was wandering. Cain then killed his brother Hevel. He's also placed in the Gullus Ari Miklat Nav and Nod. So the word na means to wander, and the word nod means to be alone, like a nidui, menuda, someone who's excommunicated, a woman who's a nida, is separate. So na means to wander, nod means to be by yourself. So both Adam and Cain were sent into Ari Miklat, into this place of Gullus. Moving ahead in history, Moshe, who we now know as Hevel, right? He's the Gilgal of Hevel, killed the Mitzri. The Mitzri, Arizal tells us, was the Gilgal of Cain. So while Cain killed Hevel, Moshe, who's now Hevel, was supposed to kill Mitzri, Cain, undo what was done, to pay him back, if you will. So that's what Moshe did. Moshe killed the Mitzri. He killed Cain, if you will. Now what happened when he killed Cain, when he killed the Mitzri? Everything was nice and great, until comes along Dasan Vaviram, say, wait a second, you're going to kill us like you killed that Mitzri? And what are the words that Moshe Rabbeinu says? Achein noda hadavar. Achein noda hadavar. Now it's known. Now noda is a very interesting word. Noda are the same letters, noda, nun, dain, there's a vav, nun, vav, dalad, ayin, are the same letters as nav and nod. Right? Nun, vav, dalad, ayin. There's a nod and a nod there. So what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu after he killed the Mitzri? Where'd he go? He was sent into Gullus. He was also exiled, because after Dasan Vaviram unfoiled the plans, so now he had to also go to Gullus. He went to Nav and Nod. He went to now wander and be by himself as he was. And where did he go? Which city? Midian. He went to Midian. So while Moshe Rabbeinu was in Gullus, wandering away from this murder, he goes into Midian. And in Midian, what does he learn in Midian? He learns from Yisro, and Yisro himself was a Dayan. And he learned from Yisro how to set up a Bezdin. Now the word Don, to judge, is the opposite of Nud, right? So the Nud, whenever you have words that are opposite, the letters are the opposite, it means it's undoing something. So Nud means to be alone, and Don means to judge. When a person's in nidui, he's a menuda, they feel distant, they lack hashkacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They don't recognize the hashkacha. When you are judging, when you recognize you're being judged by Hashem, that's recognizing hashkacha. So Moshe Beinu, who's Navanad, went to Midian to learn din from the Dayan from Yisra. So Moshe was the first Dayan of Klal Yisrael. And which of the Matanos came in the Midbar, Bezuchos Moshe Beinu? The Mon. And the Gemara Yuma tells us that the Mon was there to judge between Dinei Torah. Depending where it ended up, whose tent it ended up closer to, that told us who was right. So the Mon was also an Indian of Din, judging. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. So in essence, Moshe Rabbeinu is there to turn Nod into Dun, to have Ashkacha Pratis. When there's Din in the world, that means Ashkacha Pratis. When there's judgment, when there's punishment, when there's Schar and Onish, that means Ashkacha Pratis in the world. Listen to this incredible Maisa. There's a great Talmud Chacham, his name was Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef wrote a lot on Torah. And his friends tried convincing him to publish his Divrei Torah, his Chidushim. But Rabbi Yosef refused to publish his Dinei Torah. He didn't want to. And one day, someone broke into his home and stole all of his Chidushei Torah. And he was so taken back by this, he was devastated. He didn't know what to do. He went to his Rebbe, I forgot who his Rebbe was already, and his Rebbe said, "Do you have anything left?" He said, "No, everything was stolen, every last piece of paper." And he asked again, "Do you have anything left over?" He said, "I have my little notes on the side of my Gemara, that's all I have." He published those. So he published them, and that ended up being the Minchas Chinuch. That's how Minchas Chinuch came about. And when Gedaliah Shor told over the story, he would say, had that Ganav never came to the house of the Minchas Chinuch, he never would have published those notes in the first place. It's only because he was devastated by that loss that he had to go speak to the Rebbe, and that was the impetus for writing the Minchas Chinuch. And from that we see sometimes a person doesn't get into yeshiva, sometimes a person has something bad happen to them, sometimes there's a certain din in the world, some type of punishment in the world that we don't appreciate, but the outcome is something positive. That's what it means, Hashkacha Pratis. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that Nod, when you're wandering by yourself, that means there's lacking Hashkacha Pratis. You're lacking the recognition of Hashkacha Pratis. But Moshe Rabbeinu was able to switch that Nod to a Dun, to a Din, to a Dayan, and recognize that there is Hashkacha on every single thing that happens in this world. So that's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's able to switch the Nod to a Dun. But what about the Na? Right, we have Nav and Nod. So Moshe was judging Bnei Israel, but he was still wandering. He was still a Na 120 years. Who switched the Na? You with me still? Who switched the Na? Any suggestions? Just throw out a name. Moshe created the Din from Nod. Who switched the Na? Any names? No names. Any great tzaddikim in the Midbar? Aaron, excellent guess, beautiful guess. So what does Na mean? To wander. So which Matana came in the Zuchus of Aaron? Anan Yaakov. Isn't that incredible that Na and Anane or Anan is the opposite letters? Na is Nun Ayin, Anan is Ayin Nun. Aaron was able to take the Na, the wandering aspect, and switch it to Anani Akavot. That's a separate Indian. There's Hashkacha Pratis in the world, and then there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu believing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu leads us in the right way. What did the Anani Akavot do for us in the Midbar? It led us in the Midbar. Moshe was recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always judging us, he's always with us, and Anani Akavot, which is brought by Aaron, showed us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was leading us. He leads us in life. He sends us to the right places. There's a Gemara in Yuma that tells us, Lo yahalich adam baderech kodem kriyas hagever. Man should not travel before kriyas hagever. What does kriyas hagever mean? The before the rooster calls out. Meaning, don't travel too early. It's dangerous to travel too early. Wait for the sun to rise. Wait till you hear the sounds. But you could also interpret the words, Lo yihalich adam badera kodem kriyas hagever, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls you. Gever is a person. Before you have your calling. Sometimes in life we look what other people are trying to accomplish. We're looking at someone else's success in their learning, in their davening, in their chesed, in their money, in their business, in whatever it is. Don't go before you're called. We each have our own calling, our own tafkid, our own direction that Kadosh Baruch is leading us with the Anani HaKavod. One of my kids, his name is Yisrael Meir. So a couple years ago, I was, this doesn't happen often, but whatever reason, I had to help give him a bath. I don't really give my kids baths. My wife takes care of that, or they do it on their own. But once I was given the task of giving Yisrael Meir a bath. He was around 4 years old. So I'm getting the bath all ready for him, and I'm saying, Yisrael Meir, where are you? I'm waiting for you, the bath's already, and he's not responding to me. So I walk to the room, and he's staring outside, and he's dressed like Adam HaRishon, Kodem HaChet. And I said, Yisrael Meir, what in the world are you doing? He's just like staring at the window. He says, there's someone getting in your car. So I'm thinking, well, why don't you tell me that someone's stealing my car? So I look out the window, and Taka, there's a guy inside my car in front of the house. So I took out my keys, you know, the little, like, the panic button. I never used it before, so I pressed the panic button, and it started, like, beeping and honking the lights, and the guy got out of the car. And I went downstairs to see who it was, looked out the window, and I felt bad. It was my neighbor's father. He just walked into the wrong car. It looked like his car. So I just turned the other way, so I didn't see him, and he didn't see me, and then Zehu, fine. So, but sometimes people try to get in the car that's not theirs, or a path, a journey, a derech that's not theirs. Aaron represented, when a person wanders in their world, he's wandering without any guidance. You have to realize that you each have your own tafkit in this world. There's an Anani HaKavod, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is leading us, guiding us in this world wherever we go. So Moshe represents the din hashgacha pratas in this world, and Aaron represents that HaKadosh Baruch Hu leads us in the world. The Dun and the Anani HaKavod. And when Sukkot comes about, and you're learning Masechta Sukkot, these two concepts come together. The Anani HaKavod and the din of Moshe Rabbeinu. How is that? So Shemesh Shmuel has a beautiful piece. He talks about Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. Rosh Hashanah is connected Moshe Rabbeinu, the Dayan. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Melech. HaMelech is the theme of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. It's all about Din Moshe Rabbeinu, Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yom Kippur is about who? Which tzaddik is connected Yom Kippur?
Aaron
HaKohen. And that's why it says in the Pasuk, Ki be'onon eirel ha-kaparis. So while Yom Kippur is Anani HaKavod, Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin, Shem Shmuel says Sukkot, both Aaron and Moshe come together. Both the Anani HaKavod and the Din come together. Both the Nav and Nod turn to Anan and a Din. The Lulav, which parak are you guys learning? Lulav HaGazal? Second parak, okay. So almost there, fine. So the third parak is Lulav. So Lulav is about Din, right? The Gemara tells us that we bring Lulav, Ein Mevin Lulav, Ela, Dalmin Ela Ratzos, the Gemara in Taina says, we shake the Lulav to bring a Ritzoy. We're judged on Mayim, the Mishnah tells us, right? Ein Nidon Ela Mayim and Sukkot. Sukkot is a Yom HaDin. And that's manifests itself through the Lulav. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu, the Din, the Dayan. But the Sukkah is the Anani HaKavod. That's the protection for Aaron HaKohen. So now listen to this. The Lulav, which is Din, which is the Nod, turning to Dun, what do we do with the Lulav? What's it called? Nanuim, right? The Nod and Nod, we're shaking it. So while Moshe Rabbeinu was able to turn this Lulav into a Din, it still had the Nanuim, it was still shaking, it was still waving, it was still moving around. Because Moshe can only really do the din. He can't switch the na. The sukkah, Aaron, Ananya Kavod, that was fine, but where's the sukkah? It's outside. It's nidui. It's outside. So each one was only able to fix one element. The lulav was able to fix the din, but it was still not nuim. And the sukkah switched to Ananya Kavod, but it was still ben nidui. But that's why that Rizal says, Api Kabbalah, it's brought down in the poskim as well, there's a big inin to shake the lulav in the morning inside the sukkah. The place where you bring the din of lulav inside the Ananya Kavod of the sukkah, whereby you switch the Nav Nad, what are the letters backwards? What does it spell again? Remember? Nav Nad turns into Gan Eden. When you fuse together the lulav with the sukkah, the din, the dun, plus Ananya Kavod, you get Gan Eden. And that's why the Sfarim tell us that the sukkah is Bechinas Gan Eden. That's why we have seven Ushpizen. Because where do the Shpizen live? Where are they right now? Where is the Avram Yitzchak Yaakov? They're in Gan Eden. So when we make our sukkah, combining Aaron and Moshe into this place of Gan Eden, we welcome these seven great tzaddikim because our sukkah becomes a Bechina of Gan Eden. And the sukkah is the great example of a place that seems to be galus on the outside, but in essence, that galus is really Gan Eden. And that's the experience of these few weeks that we're in. That even though these few weeks we're in, it's a time of separation, a time of distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's really a time of Gan Eden in a very hidden, hidden way. In fact, the Maharsha writes that the 21 days of Bein HaMetzarim correspond to the 21 days of Yamin Tovim. And each of the three Shabbosos correspond to the three Yamin Tovim, the Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. For example, this week it's Keneged Shavuos, they point out. Shavuos is Keneged Matos Masi, we learn about Nidarim and Shavuos. So Shavuos on Har Sinai, we were Makabel Mushba Me Har Sinai. So each Shabbos has its own connection to the Yom Tovim. Because really behind this dark galus that we find ourselves in is really hidden Kedusha somehow, and you have to just find that. So I'll finish with one story that really shows this idea of sometimes in galus it really leads to tremendous geula. Yeshua's Yaakov Yeshua Orenstein has an incredible maisa that happened to him. He lived in Poland, and they had a very great relationship, the Jews, with the Polish president. And one time, the Polish president reached out to Rav Orenstein's kehila. He wanted to pay them a visit. And they were very happy to have the president come visit the shul. Now, in every shul in Poland, there was a picture of the president. So they had a picture of the president of Poland in their shul. Now, when the president comes to your shul, you want to make it look very nice and clean. So they start to paint the walls and clean the carpet. But as to not damage the painting, they turn the painting around. And they painted around it and fixed everything and cleaned the carpets and washed the tables and the chairs and the ständers. So finally the day came, the president showed up. And he walks in, there's a big entourage, and many of the Jews came to visit and see the big meeting. And the president's face turns white. And Rav Orenstein immediately notices what's going on. Yeshua Yaakov says, "Mr. President, I understand what bothers you. You're wondering why your picture's turned around. They forgot to turn the picture back the right way." He says, "Let me explain something to you. Mr. President, we have a mitzvah in the Torah that's called tefillin. And every single day we wear tefillin. Except for Shabbos. Why? Because all week long, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very far, or at least he feels very far from us. So we need to remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, so we wear tefillin. But come Shabbos, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our presence, we don't need to wear tefillin anymore. So to you, Mr. President, all year round, you're far away. We need a picture to remind us of who you are. But when you're in our presence, we don't need a picture anymore. We put the tefillin away. We put your picture away. We have you. You yourself." So too, he explained that nowadays we have mitzvahs. In this world, in the world of galus, but the Gemara Nida tells us, "La'asid lavo, koa mitzvos betelos." There's no longer going to be a need for keeping mitzvos. What does that mean? Explain to Yeshua Yaakov, because now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels so far, we're in this place of darkness and galus. We need reminders of mitzvos, tefillin, tzitzis. But la'asid lavo, where the Shechina is going to be so clear to us, there's not going to be a need for mitzvahs. We don't need the pictures anymore. And that's what we hope for. So in this Gullus, this should be the last year we're celebrating the Gullus and the 3 weeks and the 9 days and Tisha B'Av. We should be zocheh soon to the Gula Shleima B'Amidas, Meher Ameinu, Amen V'Amen.